This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
This is Burr Martin of the Burr Martin Experience Podcast, or Selfie Dad as I'm known around the internet. Now, I could tell you all about my podcast by throwing in some special effects or sound bites, but I'm not going to do that, all right? I'm a busy man, brother. I'm a C-minus internet celebrity. Look, I've worked in radio for over 12 years. I've produced about 15 different shows. I worked in a comic book shop. I've done stand-up, hosted events, and I was even voted Hero of the Week in the UK. My podcast is co-hosted by my wife, and we talk about anything and everything. And occasionally, one of our three kids will interrupt to tell us what's going on in their generation. We talk about celebrities, politics, pop culture, and news stories you've probably never heard about. All right, we're radio friendly and we try and keep things upbeat. So join me every week for the Burr Martin Experience Podcast here on the Pants Pending Studios Network. That's Burr Martin. So put a BM in your podcast catcher today and it'll be who wrote the poop joke? I am a C-minus internet celebrity. Which one of you writers wrote that? You go back and you work for Late Night with Chevy Chase. That won't fly here.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
We're gonna do great things, kid.
Yeah.
You and me.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is the social hour. On today's show, Deese sits down with libertarian presidential candidate Joe Jorgensen. And now your host. The only thing he could be president of is the George Michael fan club, Deese Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode of the show. We have a fantastic episode for you. I'm very honored. I got to sit down one-on-one with libertarian presidential candidate Joe Jorgensen. It was a great opportunity to talk to her, kind of dig in a little bit about some of her policies and ideas. I know I talk a lot about politics on this show and kind of the stranglehold the two-party system has upon this country. And I encourage you to take a listen to this episode. It is very informative. It's probably the funniest episode we've ever done of this show, but that's all right. We mix it up. It's a mixed bag here at the Social Hour. You get some commentary, you get some serious. Sometimes you got to slow it down and really look at some of the reality. And we do have an election coming up. Joe Jorgensen was nice enough to come to my studio, sit down with me, and have a little conversation, which is more than I can say for any other presidential candidate. So, and I reached out to Biden. He probably read it and forgot. And I reached out to Trump, and I think he has anyone blocked with a Latino last name. So I'm pretty sure I won't get any of them on my show. I learned a lot about the Libertarian Party through this interview. I've been doing more research. I've been doing more kind of sitting down and kind of engaging with that. I do like a lot of their policies. Like any political party, there's things you'll probably not agree with, but I suggest opening your ears and eyes and reading. One thing in a past show, we kind of discussed reading the actual platforms of some of the political parties. And I sat down and read the political platforms for the Republicans, the Democrats, and the Libertarians. And I think you can learn a lot that way. I think if you do that, you'll probably have a better sense of where you sit. I'm not saying it may change your position on things, but it may make you look at your political ideology a little differently. You know, when we start talking third party people, will often make the comment that it's a wasted vote, or the libertarians have some interesting ideas on, you know, minimum wage, which we get into, or you know, education, you know, whatever it is that their hot button topic is for their particular person. But I would argue that we have had no success recently with our two-party system. So even if, not to and take this in the spirit it's intended, Joe Jorgensen, even if Joe Jorgensen was an utter failure as a president, it would still be equal or greater than the utter failure of any other party's presidency, which were almost guaranteed. So I would be willing to guarantee that no matter who, that, you know, Trump again or Biden is not going to do anything beneficial for this country. In fact, I feel that either one will just divide us further. So take a listen. Do some research, at least. You know, people just hear libertarian, they're like, they're instantly put off. But they've probably never actually researched the policies. Like any political party, there's a wide scope of ideology. Because the libertarians are much more kind of, you know, catch-all of freedom and liberty, hence their name, they kind of end up with some people who have some extreme ideas. But then there's the moderates, and there's the people that with genuine ideas and that they could be applied. And I think Joe is one of those people. She's very sensible. She's very nice. And I really like a lot of her ideas. So I'd like you to take a listen. And then just do your research after that. And that's all I got to say about that. But also, guys, before we get into the interview, I do have some shows finally coming up this Friday. I've got an online show, so check the Social Hour page for that. It's I didn't book it. I didn't create it. So I know very little about it. I was just asked to do it, and I said yes. So check for links coming to that soon. I've also got a show at Live for Blue in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho on the 20th, Shooters on the 21st, and Jeremiah Johnson Brewing on the 25th. That's also in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and looks like just added the 27th in Missoula, Montana. So live comedy's coming back, baby. Not really, but kind of the best it can. And also, as always, every Monday, the Social Minute, guys, visit that, view that, share that. That's growing an audience pretty quickly, and I appreciate that. That one's huge for me. I really, really like that show. And then the Social Hour, again, every Tuesday, Thursday schedule now, guys. So that's it, guys. Let's get into this interview with Joe Jorgensen. She was amazing. It was great to hang out with her. I got to do a little roast for her later that evening. She was a lot of fun, very gracious, and I appreciate her time and her ideals. So take a listen. Thank you for joining us. We are in studio. I have a very special guest. I'm excited to have her here. I feel very honored to get a chance to speak to her. We have Libertarian presidential candidate Joe Jorgensen. I really appreciate you coming down and doing this and coming to Spokane and saying hi on your way through this little campaign. So,
oh, thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. How is Washington State treating you so far? It's been brief, I know, but...
The people have been just as wonderful as the weather.
That's great.
And the one thing I've been mentioning is 82 degrees in Spokane feels a heck of a lot different than 82 degrees in South Carolina. So I couldn't be happier in July.
That's good. Yeah, it's a little different. That humidity will hit you differently on the East Coast, right?
Well, the not only the East, but the Southeast.
Sure. Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. So a little bit different. Now, let's. I do want to ask you about, I've got a lot of things I want to ask you about. We got limited time, so I'll try and make it as concise as possible. But first of all, I do want to kind of let people get to know you specifically. Now, you have some history with the Libertarian Party. You've
quite a bit of history, actually.
Right. Yeah, I heard a little bit about that earlier, and I've been reading quite a bit about you trying to bone up. The funny thing is I've been doing this show for 6 years, Joe. I've done 320 episodes probably. Combined, I've done about before this episode, I probably did about 27 minutes of total prep time. I spent several hours reading about you last night.
Well, thank you.
Trying to, you know, and getting a little more history and background. You're a psych major. Is that right?
I received my undergrad degree in psychology, and then I have a PhD in industrial organizational psychology, and I teach psychology at Clemson University.
Wow, so, that's pretty impressive. Do you have any professional opinions on Trump or Biden's personalities? Would you be willing to diagnose?
Well, so, first of all, that's against medical ethics to diagnose.
Then I wouldn't have you do. Well, not diagnose, opinions.
Right. Well, actually. I hate to come to Joe Biden's defense too much, and I'm not going to, you know, first of all, I would like, well, let me mention, you know, habit is very powerful.
Sure.
And I got to admit, I didn't really fault him when he started saying, vote Joe Biden, U.S. Senate, because you say that for years and years.
Muscle memory.
Yeah. Exactly. And I got to admit, a few times I've said VP. However, my complaint about Joe Biden isn't what he's saying now at his advanced age. My complaint is what he was doing in his 40s, 50s, 60s, sure. or even 30s. That's the real problem, is has been his views all along.
I assume you're referring to the, you know, drug and crime laws that he was very instrumental
everything.
In writing in his time. I am a big proponent of people can grow and change,
yeah.
You know, as America grows and changes. Although I do think that most career politicians, their growth and change is disingenuous and pandering in most cases.
Yeah, well, can I point out, and I point this out whenever and wherever I can, that our country was founded with the idea that we have politicians who go to Washington for a couple months each year, and then they go home,
right.
and they live under the laws they passed.
Right.
I don't think Joe Biden has ever had to live under a law that he passed. So this is Animal Farm all over again. What we have is we have royalty. And in our country, we don't have official royalty,
yeah.
but we've got politicians who basically are kings and queens who basically set the law that they never have to follow.
Well, that's a great point. And I'm glad, since you bring that up, I'll jump around here and kind of the things I wanted to ask you about, but you bring it up. So we'll talk about it. Term limits. How do you feel about term limits for senators, congressmen, things like that? What's your stance on that?
Yeah, I am on the side of having term limits.
Okay.
However, that's not going to solve all of the problems.
Sure.
And I do realize there's an opposing side that says yes, but if we have term limits, then basically the power goes to the parties and they start putting people in and out like pawns.
Yeah.
So basically what we have to do is we have to work hard to get government so small that it doesn't matter if we have term limits. That if you don't go to vote on the first Tuesday in November, if you forget to vote, that it's not going to matter because
right.
your health care, retirement, education, because nothing depends on it. So I see the term limits as, yes, good to talk about, but we need to just make government smaller,
well,
so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think term limits is, you know, it's not the same person. Yeah, you see, I mean, these career politician wasn't meant to be a career, like you said. People were, you know, went to town and then they came back and lived under those laws, whereas now they're just living kind of above those laws
yep.
continuously. So that brings me to another kind of facet of that. One, the election process of getting these people in office. You know, it's kind of comes to who has the largest piggy bank.
Yes.
You know, how do you feel about putting a cap on campaign funds where everyone has the same dollar amount to spend on their campaign funds?
Yeah, again, I think that that's attacking the wrong problem. Because on the one hand, yes, you want people to spend their money how they want.
Right.
But on the other hand, you certainly don't want corporations or even individuals to take over, because then we're back to royalty.
Yeah.
Again, I think we need to keep our focus on making government smaller.
So, and last kind of thing on that, with you mentioned corporations, what's your stance on lobbyists? with the ability for, I mean, lobbyists in Congress and things like that, basically buying these votes that these people are getting.
Oh.
Are you know, in I mean, you've got, you know, Budweiser is obviously going to forever just buy these people for votes against regulations against DUIs and things like that. It's like...
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And there have been laws written for basically one company. For instance, a law might be written in which, you know, all companies out of the state of Ohio that do such and such, and it turns out it's one company.
You're right.
So that is not what the founders intended, and it's not fair. There's no reason that one company should be singled out, or one industry, or one anything. I agree with Milton Friedman that we need to vote with our feet, vote with our dollars, and that we should be able to make our own choices every single day,
yeah.
And not the lobbyists who a few times a year come out and say, okay, this is the way it's going to be for everybody in this particular industry.
Sure. I mean, it would be nice to get have that a little bit of, you know, not just feeling like they are buying specifically whatever vote they want. And that's right. Benefiting them and not the people.
Right.
One of the things I know is a big issue right now because of not only the coronavirus, but just in general after Obama's election or terms in office was healthcare. I was reading on your website that you say, you know, we can reduce the cost of healthcare by 75% by allowing real price competition. And, you know, this would reduce government and insurance company paperwork. How exactly, what's the route to go about that? I mean, how does that work? What's the way we're reducing it, I guess, through that?
So the way Singapore does it is actually very similar to how the state of Indiana does it with their employees. And I'm not suggesting this is the end result, that
sure.
This is the end free market. But what we can't do is we can't just pull the rug out from under everybody and say, okay, everybody, you're in a free market, because prices are way too high.
Yeah.
Nobody can afford anything right now. And
especially
right now. Yeah, especially right now, exactly. So I'd like to give you an example. In America, an open heart surgery costs on average around $130,000.
Wow.
And people are concerned that maybe their insurance won't cover it. And what will they do if they can't get the open heart surgery? In Singapore, the price is $18,000. Now, granted, that's still a good chunk of change.
Right.
But many Americans buy a car for $18,000
sure.
or more. So if it were a life or death situation and your insurance company wouldn't cover it, you could almost pay for it. Whereas $130,000, very few people that's just out of reach. So what Singapore has done is they have basically put dollars into bank accounts. It's similar to a health savings account.
Okay.
Where they are given dollars and then they use their dollars to spend money. So something that I've pointed out, and you might have also read this on my website, that the two health specialties in our country that are the most free market, not entirely, but they're the most free market, are LASIK surgery and cosmetic surgery. And
okay.
The reason they're somewhat free market is because the insurance companies don't pay for those procedures. People have to pay for them out of their own pocket. So, of course, when people spend their own money, they're going to be careful, right? Nobody ever spends somebody else's money as well as they spend their own.
You know, you save those.
Yeah. So if you're told, okay, you get to go buy a car, you only have to pay a $5,000 or, you know, 5% whatever deductible.
Right.
But you can buy any car you want. Well, heck, you know, I think I'll buy a Maserati instead of a Honda.
Sure. Yeah,
if I only
nice.
Have to pay a copay and I don't have to worry about how much it costs. But if I'm the one paying for 100% of the car, of course I'm going to shop around. And that's exactly what people do for cosmetic surgery and LASIK surgery. So doctors have to compete with each other for the lowest price, for the best quality. And that's what we need for the rest of our healthcare, is to have doctors competing against each other for open heart surgery, knee surgery, whatever. Now, I'd like to quickly add, it's not the fault of the doctors. You know, they're pretty much handcuffed because they've got paperwork and regulation. And so many doctors are saying it's not even fun to practice medicine anymore because so much of it is paperwork. So what happens in Singapore is people go around with their dollars just like they're shopping around for the best car or for the best gasoline prices or the best grocery prices. And so doctors and hospitals have to compete. Otherwise, they don't get their business. And guess what? They go bankrupt if they don't get their business. In our country, we've got such a government monopoly, and we've got government regulating the number of doctors, the number of nurses, the number of hospitals, pretty much everything.
Right.
Nobody has to worry about going bankrupt. So they can pretty much charge whatever prices they want because the insurance companies just keep paying. And I'd like to make one last point, which is a lot of people say, well, but the insurance companies are trying to keep healthcare costs down. Not entirely, because the only way for an insurance company to make more money, to grow, is to next year collect more in premiums than they collect this year, right?
Right.
So it's actually in their best interest to pay out many claims and to pay out just enough that they can say, well, we need to increase premiums. Now, of course, they can't approve everything. They'd go bankrupt. But what I'm saying is it's not in the health insurance company's best interest to try to keep costs down to, let's say, less than they were last year, because that means their profits are going to be less than they were last year.
Yeah. So they, the insurance company, it's definitely a tangled web between the insurance company and the government system. In Washington state, we have an odd system where and I'm not sure how much it is like this in the rest of the country, but, state run facilities, you know, are actually less expensive, whereas the ones that are sanctioned by independent companies don't really have a cap on what they can charge people. So we end up with extremely high costs because the stuff that's state-sanctioned instead of privately owned have caps. And then so, sky's the limit in these privatized ones, and that kind of ends up being the...
Well, again, people are spending other people's money. The insurance companies go ahead and pay the prices because they know next year they'll just raise premiums.
They get that extra money.
Yeah. I mean, think about car insurance. And let me back up and say, the big problem is that our health insurance isn't really insurance. So imagine if your car insurance paid for gas, oil, car washes. You wouldn't shop around for the best gasoline prices.
Right.
You know, what do you care? You pay your little $5 copay. You might go to the nicest one, the one that, serves you coffee while you're sitting there, or, offers whatever, free entertainment. And you pay your little $5 copay and off you go. Whereas the way it is now, we shop around for gas prices because we do pay the entire bill. So why can't, for instance, in healthcare, why not have people pay for their own small regular thing like annual checkups? Or, even if you go in for, let's say, you think you have a sinus infection, by the time you end up having all that bureaucratic work on top of it, it really increases the cost. Again, what if every time you bought gas, you had to fill out a form in triplicate, and they send the forms off to the insurance companies, and then the insurance companies pay them, and then they collect the deductible from you? I mean, what a mess.
Yeah. Well, I heard it said once, though, in America, we don't really have health care. We have sick care.
Prepaid healthcare. And now we get into, oh my gosh, nutrition and exercise. Oh, and I'd like to relate. I think this is the perfect story. So there is a book called The Cure That Works by somebody who visited Singapore. And as he was talking to everybody, doctors, nurses, patients, they all said, oh, this is a great, great system. We love it. Well, while he was getting a cab ride, from a cab driver. Mm-hmm. He mentioned about that he was there for the healthcare system. And the cab driver said, I hate our healthcare system because I have to work out 3 times a week. And the author was like, whoa, wait a minute. So you're telling me the government's making you work out 3 times a week? And he said, no, I don't have to work out at all. But if I don't work out, then I'll gain weight and I might get diabetes and then I'll have to pay the cost.
Oh, so it's incentive.
Exactly. So in our country, I find it interesting that you said it's sick care instead of health care. Exactly. Because there's no incentive to be healthy because nobody pays the price.
Right.
And to give another car analogy, what if somebody who had 5 DUIs paid the same insurance, car insurance costs, as, you know, the little old school teacher who's never had a speeding ticket in her life.
Right.
Well, again, no incentive to drive well.
To drive, yeah.
No incentive to follow the speeding limits. And that's what we have in healthcare. And so now we have sick care.
Yeah. Let's talk about energy real quick and kind of
sure.
resources moving forward, because obviously it's, you know, it's been a big topic for a long time. I'm doing some research. It looks like you're very pro nuclear power. Is this fair to say?
Well, and, yes, but
okay.
let me mention.
Yeah,
I personally believe that nuclear power is the way to go because it's good for the environment. And it's
safer. I don't know
better,
if it's
let's
yeah,
say,
yeah
yeah let's say better.
It's, you know,
let's
it's not like a green tea for the invite, you know.
No,
it's,
I mean, and nothing is going to be ideal.
Sure,
but let's just say carbon footprint wise,
sure,
it's probably the best option we have for reliability. However, as president, I would not subsidize the nuclear power industry.
Okay.
What I would do, however, is take subsidies away from the fossil fuel companies. So right now, our government is heavily subsidizing these older pollution-causing fuels and not subsidizing, or at least not subsidizing as much, nuclear energy. So I want a level playing field mm-hmm. where we vote with our feet again, vote with our dollars, and let's let the best alternative win, as opposed to the government deciding which one they want to win. And that's part of the reason why people have a negative view of nuclear power, is because 40 years ago, when they were looking at different nuclear options, the government basically came along and picked the winner,
right,
as opposed to letting the free market compete for us, offering us the best quality. And right now, we do have companies competing. For instance, Rolls-Royce mm-hmm. has created a nuclear reactor that's like one-tenth the size of the old nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
So that's what I would like to see, is companies working for something that's safer and more efficient.
Well, I think the major problem with nuclear that we run into that in my research is that we've got worldwide, we've got about 444 sites currently. To run off nuclear, we need about 14,500, they estimate. So you're talking about, you know, an extra 14,000 nuclear. I mean, 10 times what we're carrying, or more than what we're carrying now, with a lack of space and storage because of location it has to be at, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, again, the advanced technology or fourth generation, that doesn't have the same problems with
footprint.
Waste as the original. But again, even notice you're talking about, well, we would need this many instead of that many. That, to me, and I'm sure you don't mean it this way because
sure.
I know you're a libertarian, but that phrasing is very centrally planned. And what I'm saying is allow people to make their own choices. So maybe there would be some areas that didn't have nuclear power. So rather
okay.
than saying this is
so
how
we're
many
not
we
all
need,
in, we're,
let's,
we're...
let's have the free market decide.
Now, with that in mind, then you did mention on, I'm not sure if it was on your website or where I read that, you would cut subsidies for wind power. Is that included in just cutting subsidies to other power sources in general? Is there something you feel that lacks with the wind power industry?
I would cut it for all of them.
Okay.
Because
it specifically stated that. So I just want to be clear. It was that's not.
Oh
just,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, wind among others, because if an energy source isn't promising enough, isn't successful enough, doesn't show that it can work, if it's not good enough for somebody to invest their personal funds, then we certainly don't want the government taking our money and investing the money for us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, we talk about capitalism, how capitalists want to make money. Well, okay, let's leave it capitalist and let the capitalists decide where they want to put their money. You know, like put your money where your mouth is.
Right.
There's no reason for the government to take our money and spend it on something that we don't want. Now, wind, yes, perhaps good for the environment, although I'm an animal lover and I've heard many stories
sure,
of birds and all
yeah.
of that. But the point is, let's say, and I am concerned about the birds. Does the government have the right to take my money to put in a system that's going to kill birds.
Sure.
And if somebody else wants to spend their money, okay, I can't stop them. But there's no reason why I should put my money towards something that I don't want.
And I do agree with that. But aren't we kind of looking at a system where, in general, that's kind of what the government is doing? And partly I understand that, as a, you know, from the libertarian platform, that's minimalized. But I mean, we are in a system where the government is taking our money and putting it towards many things we don't want. In certain cases, you know, I think the churches should be taxed, but because I'm not a religious person, but now the religious people, you know, they don't get taxed, and then our government spends it on military, you know, and this, it's like in ways you wouldn't want your money personally spent. So how do we reduce that to more of an individual level on such a you know, what is 350 million people in America now? I mean, how do you reduce an individual's feeling like they're getting what they want with their money on such a large plate?
Right. And I completely understand your concern about religion, because if churches are engaged in activities that sometimes maybe even compete with other activities, they're basically getting a subsidy in that maybe something you do support is getting taxed extra so that churches don't get taxed.
Right.
My solution, though, instead of taxing churches, would be to get rid of taxing the other things. And what I want to do is eliminate the federal income tax. And a lot of people say, well, whoa, how can we run the federal government without the income tax? But they don't realize that only about half of the revenues to run the government come from the income tax. And we need to cut government enough, by at least by half, to get the kind of government that we all deserve. So on the first day, I would start bringing the troops home.
Yeah.
Our military we spend three times what the next country spends. So we could cut our military by two-thirds, basically $700 billion. We could cut our military and still be tied with the next largest military. So how about we cut income tax by $700 billion and leave the churches alone, but then the rest of us get to not pay taxes, and we get to bring the troops home, which means that the troops get to be with their families, and it makes us safer because now we're not in the Middle East where we are less safe. And the irony here is that the job of the military is to protect us, not make us less safe.
Right. Well, I mean, ideally, I think that was the job of the military. I think they're doing, not of their own fault, but kind of other things at times. You know, economically speaking, there's some interesting things I was reading also about kind of increasing our economy. You state that from 59 to 69, poverty was cut in half in America. Well, the government did little to address this. You know, when looking back on this, you know, that was a time when, you know, in the 60s, we are actually, you know, government was actually increasing, and they were expanding tax cuts and building things like Medicaid and things like that. So how do we do that now and get that, you know, be able to cut poverty in half again or more, or potentially, you know, similar, without that kind of government overreach in a libertarian approach?
So specifically, how do we do what? What is the it?
You know, do what they were successful in doing. You know, they were able to cut in half, you know, about half, while doing little to, you know, to actually.
Oh,
well, the
you
government
mean that
doing
they
much.
Cut they cut poverty in
right.
half?
Right. So how would we do that in a system where, you know, the kind of libertarian approach is a little bit different than how it was done in the 60s and while they were successful with it. So I would
suggest that the government wasn't successful in cutting poverty. I would suggest that private charities and companies were successful in cutting poverty, because if you look at it, even though Lyndon Johnson came along with, you know, all of his programs,
right,
they and people say, well, you know, that was around 1964, so all this progress in the late 60s. No, it takes government forever to do, you know, it takes them forever to figure out who's going to sit at what chair around a table to make their laws. So really, the bulk of it wasn't enacted until 71. So all of that progress in the 60s that people attribute to government was actually attributed to private charity and more local support. So what I say the government should do is get out of the way and to allow people to help others through a way that's accountable. The problem with the government is it's not accountable.
Yeah.
And especially in the 60s, and still continues somewhat to this day, but they had laws that split families up because guess what? If the dad sticks around, you don't get as much money.
Sure.
So if you've got a kid, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep – are you – basically, are you going to pay the government to allow – what we now say your baby daddy, right? I've watched Teen Mom.
You're up on it, Joe. I know
the lingo. Although I gotta admit, the only reason I watch Teen Mom is because my daughter introduced me to Teen Mom.
Yeah.
I'm not a regular viewer though.
Sure.
But I have watched a few episodes with her, and I've seen all the fights between the baby daddy and
it gets
in-laws.
Wild out there.
Lots of in-law problems on that show, but are you going to pay the government, which essentially is what you're doing, because they're giving you less money.
Right, yeah.
Are you going to pay the government money so that the baby daddy can live with you?
Sure.
I can tell you this, watching Teen Mom, the reaction is the opposite. They'd rather keep the extra money themselves, and who wouldn't?
Well, sure. Yeah, in a system that's designed to kind of not incentivize a family staying together.
Well, not only that, but disincentivize.
Right.
That's even worse. Exactly.
Yeah, it's not even neutral. It's actively disincentivizing. So on poverty, wages, economy, things like that. What's your stance on minimum wage?
That minimum wage hurts the very people it intends to help. It hurts lower socioeconomic people. It hurts new entrants into the workforce, and it hurts minorities.
Can you quantify? How that happens? Because I mean,
And we've seen it happen. So, for instance, if you want your first job, and by the way, one of my first jobs was in the fast food industry.
Same here, Wendy's.
So that was my first job, and again, a first job, it gives you the and let me back up and just give you one piece of information that a lot of people don't realize, which is the average person making minimum wage a year later. Something like only 1% of them are still making minimum wage.
Right.
This is usually a way to get your foot in the door for a first job, to show that you're dependable, show that you're reliable, to learn how to work within a situation, and then spiff up your resume, and then you move on to the next
job.
Which
is kind of how it should
exactly.
be. It's not designed as a living wage. It's designed as like a kind of a kids that working part-time through high school or something should be getting.
Yes. And in fact, many of those jobs did go to high school kids. And if you look back at those figures we were talking about in the 1960s, it tremendously hurt black teenagers over white teenagers.
Okay.
Because white teenagers were going to get the jobs regardless. But But people were more able to discriminate against black teenagers. So anyway, now the minimum wage has been raised artificially, so now are fast food companies hiring teenagers? No, they're automating it. Now we've got little kiosks.
Right.
And we've seen repeatedly that what employers will do, because they have to make a profit or they're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
What they will do is instead of hiring low-wage people to let them get their foot in the door, they'll just go out and buy machinery.
Right.
They'll go out and buy robots before they spend money on people they can't afford.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up here in a second. What's your stance on minimum wage? Would you say raise it, lower it, and eliminate it completely, are you talking about? Or what is the...
I'm saying allow the adults to make their own decisions.
Okay.
Allow the employers to make whatever agreement they want with the employees who are willing to say, try me out, give me a shot. I'll work minimum wage in the beginning to show you that I'm worthwhile. And, you know, and it also cuts into even apprenticeships and internships.
Yeah.
And basically, I had a friend who owned a motorcycle shop, and he would have high school students or people who wanted to get into the business come work for him at a very low rate, but they were basically getting free training. And then he wasn't allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I were a high school student and this was my passion, hey, I'll work for next to free so I can get free training.
Well, I can tell you this, being a comedian, the way you become a comedian is you spend countless hours practicing your craft for free.
Yep.
Late at night in bars.
Below minimum craft, wage.
Yeah,
right? Below minimum
wage. You're literally spending money. I mean, I used to drive 4 hours to do 5 minutes for $25, you know, and then I'd have to pay, you know, sleep on a couch or sleep in my car. And you front load that kind of willingness and if you are qualified and capable, it definitely pays off.
Oh yeah, my husband's a musician.
Oh, very. Yeah,
I
same.
Completely,
yeah.
Yeah. In fact, sometimes I would ask him, "Do you realize what mileage on the car costs for that?" Yeah, it was 3.5 hours to get to that gig last night. Let's look at the You know, let's look at, you know, whatever 51.5 cents a mile, 58 cents, whatever the government was giving you at the
right
time. Did you really come out ahead on this? But yeah, then you get your name known, and by the way, they ended up making money, and they were voted best band of the upstate and all
they
of that.
They still play?
So actually, after 10 or 15 years, they finally it's been just a little less than a year that they've stopped playing. But they were around, I mean, pretty long for cover type band. But you know, they got to the point where after playing these low paying gigs, that they could play expensive parties, the private parties that pay something. So, again, if the government had stepped in and said, no, we're not going to let you because, again, by the time you pay for gas and oil and wear and tear on the car to get down there, you're pretty much paying the venue to let you play.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Joe, any last words to our listeners about Libertarians in General, your website, where to get more information,
yes,
et cetera? Definitely.
The one thing I'd like to point out,
yes,
is that well over half of our volunteers are non-libertarians. There are so many people getting excited. Please go to our website, which is joe20.com. That's joe20.com. Thanks.
Very good. Take a listen, guys, or go read the website, read up, do your due diligence this November. We are not just a two-party system. There are options out there. So definitely read up and think before you vote this November. At least get educated. Do yourself that favor. Joe, I truly appreciate you being here and doing this.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for coming to Washington, coming on the Social Hour, and I wish you the best of luck this November.
Thank you.
Thank you
great
very
time.
Much, guys. And for the Social Hour, guys, thank you very much, and we will see you next week.